first chapter, I usually throw it away and write it again after finishing the whole book. Very, very common for me. So this is one of the newest things I've written for Oathbringer, and therefore it's actually one of the least polished. For those who don't know, the Stormlight Archive, what I do with them is the prologues all happen on the same night. A night several years before the book series actually begins. And each of the prologues is a different character's view on what happened that night. And each one kind of reveals a little bit more of the secrets and things that were going on. And so the first book showed us Zeth from that night, and the second book showed us Yasna. The third book is Eshna on that night. She's the Parshendi. So Eshna had always told her sister that she was certain something wonderful lay over the next hill. And then, one day, she crossed the hill and had found aliens. Strange and wonderful creatures who spoke a guttural language with no discernible rhythm. But creatures who created beauty all the same. They wore clothing more vibrant than the listeners could create. More vibrant even than Caribus, though they couldn't grow their own armor. And were so terrified of the storms that they hid inside tombs of rock or wood, even of a traveler. Most remarkably, they had only one form. It seemed to her at first that these creatures, these Alevi, must have forgotten their forms, as the listeners had. That built an instant kinship between them. That, and the fact that they seemed to have adopted another group of listeners who had somehow lost their forms. Then they began taking care of those listeners, so the poor souls without songs would not hurt themselves. Oh, how innocent those first meetings had been. Eshnai went with the drummers to gather their instruments. She had never quite understood what her purpose was to be this night, when the Alethi and the listeners dined to celebrate their contract together. She was a scout, a hunter, but also their foremost expert on the Alethi. She wasn't one of the five, but neither was she lowly. She was important tonight, yet not so important she couldn't be spared for some hands-on labor. She was glad for that. She hummed to the rhythm of awe as she helped unload the drums from the car behind the chills. She had never wished for authority. People with authority couldn't go chasing the horizon. But if being an expert brought her to this wonderful place, then she would accept it. This wonderful and terrible place. She handed the drum to Hermal, feeling dwarfed by the palace structure. The humming sounds from people working echoed in this cavernous unloading dock on the western side of the palace. It was so large, it could accommodate their entire caravan. 200 listeners had packed in here during their first arrival and hadn't filled the place. Indeed, most of the listeners couldn't attend their feast upstairs, but the Alevi had seen to their refreshment anyway, providing mountains of food and drink for the group down here. So wonderful. This palace was what the buildings at the center of the plains must have looked like before being weathered by the storms. The sheer engineering prowess of the city, with its clustered buildings and enormous walls, had made her revise, yet again, her understanding of these creatures they met. She stepped out of the wagon, looking at the upper reaches of the building, humming to excitement. When she told Bentley she was determined to map the world, she imagined a place of natural discovery. Canyons and hills, forests and lakes overgrown with life. And yet, all along, this had been out there, waiting just beyond their reach. And so had more listeners. A population that was not merely some little tribe lacking songs. An enormous, mind-numbing population of people like her own, but silent, and owned by the humans. They keep wanting to come help, Dipgeth said, to curiosity, noting where Eshnai had been looking. He shook his head, his beard sparkling with gemstones of ruby to match the prominent red colors of his skin, which swirled only briefly with touches of black near his chin and the edges of his carapace. It reminded her of Bethany's pattern. Dipgeth handed her a drum. The little rhythmless ones want to be near us. They sense that something is wrong with their minds, I tell you. Eshnai accepted the drum and set it with the others. A group of parchment, as they were called, clustered around the outside of their ring of workers. She hesitated, then jumped down and walked over to the parchment. You aren't needed, she said to Peace, hands out to the group. We would prefer to handle our own drums. The ones without songs looked to her with dull eyes. Go, she said to pleading, waving toward the nearby festivities, where parchment and human servants laughed together, despite the language barrier. Humans clap along the listeners singing the old songs. Enjoy yourselves. It's a day for pleasure and parties. The parchmen did not move. They seemed to show no interest in this activity, though a few did look toward the songs and popped their heads. She sighed and returned to unloading the drums. It won't work, Renlia said to skepticism, resting her arms across the drum. They just can't imagine what it's like to live. Their pieces of property would be both bought and sold. What to make of this idea? Slaves? Clay, one of the five, had gone to the slavers in the city and purchased a person to see if it was truly possible, and it had been depressingly easy. He hadn't even bought a parchment. There had been a lethe there for sale. Apparently, the parchmen were expensive and were considered high-quality slaves. The listeners had been told this as if, for some reason, they were supposed to feel proud of that fact. She hummed the curiosity and nodded to Gitgaf, who smiled and hummed a piece. Everyone was used to Eshnai wandering off in the middle of jobs. It wasn't that she was unreliable. Well, maybe she was, but at least she was consistently unreliable. She passed the parchment and hummed this to a song to them, the song of hunts, to the rhythm of excitement. They just looked at her with hollow eyes. They wore slave form. At least, that was what the listeners had decided to call it. Really, it wasn't a form at all, a lack of one. They seemed like dull form, but dull forms could hear the rhythms, and these obviously could not. Eshnai herself wore work form instead of war form. The armor of war form could be handy in a hunt, but work form was more freeing. She liked the way she fought while in work form. She wandered away from the parchment, walking up the steps and entering the palace, trying to take in the ornamentation, the beauty, the sheer overwhelming wonder of the building. Beautiful and terrible. People who were bought and sold kept this place clean. But what was that? Was that what freed the humans to create good, great works like the carvings on the pillars she passed, or the inlaid marble patterns on the floor? She passed soldiers who wore their metal carapace. Humans hadn't lost their forms. They only had one. Always in mate form, work form, and war form all at once. They wore their emotions on their faces far more than listeners. Oh, Eshnai's people would smile and laugh and cry, but not like these Alethi, who were perpetually held enslaved to their emotions. Perhaps that's where they had gotten the idea. The lower levels of the palace had an open field now, broad hallways and galleries lit by spears containing carefully cut gemstones that made light sparkle, as opposed to the uncut stones her people tended to wear. Sparkling chandeliers hung above her, broken suns spraying light all around. She trailed up the steps, holding to a hardwood banister polished so often that it reflected her face. How interesting it was that listeners, with their varied faces and skin, should be the ones who could have any form they wished, while the Alethi, who seemed so dull with their tan skins, should be the ones so vibrant with so many emotions. Perhaps the simple way their bodies looked was another reason they sought to ornament everything, from their clothing to the pillars that held up their ceilings. Could we do this, she thought, humming to appreciation, if we knew the right form for creating art? Yet the floors of the palace were more like tunnels, narrow stone corridors, rooms like bunkers dug in a mountainside. She made her way back toward the feast hall, but with diversions, glancing at the rooms, making a mental map in her head. She had been told she could wander if she wished that the palace was open, save for placing guards at the doors. So she decided to take it and learn everything she could. Another room with books in here, a guest room with a bed and furniture in another, an indoor privy with running water, marble she still didn't understand. She poked through a dozen rooms. As long as she was back in time for music, Clay and the others would fly and wouldn't complain. They were accustomed to her ways, just like everyone else. She was always wandering off, poking at things, peeking into doors, and finding the king. Eshnai froze, the door cracked as she looked in her lush room with the thick red rug and bookshelf lining the walls. So much information just lying around, casually ignored. That was the king himself, standing in front of a table, pointing at something on it, surrounded by a group of five Alethi in uniforms with long dresses, with one old man in robes. Why wasn't Gavilar at the feast? Why weren't there guards at the door? Eshnai exhumed anxiety and pulled back, but not before one of the women inside prodded the king in the arm and pointed toward Eshnai. Anxiety pounding in her head, she pulled the door closed, but a moment later, a tall man in a uniform stepped out. The king would like to see you, the man said. She spoke their language pretty well these days, but she pretended not to. Sir, she cocked her head. Words? Don't be coy, the soldier said. You You're one of the interpreters. Come in. Nervous, she let him lead her into the den. Thank you, Marinus, Gavilar said. He nodded to the others, and they filed out, leaving Eshnai at the door, attuning consolation and humming it loudly, even though the humans wouldn't understand what it meant. Eshnai, the king said, I have something to show you. He knew her name? She wasn't aware that the king had been paying that close attention to them. She spent most of her time speaking with his scribes, trying and failing to explain the rhythms of them. She stepped further into the room, into the small, warm room, holding her arms tightly around her. She didn't understand this man. It was more than his alien, dead way of speaking, more than the fact that she couldn't anticipate what emotions might be swirling there, as Warform and Makeform protested inside of him. More than any human, this man baffled her. What did he want? Why had he offered them such a favorable treaty? At first, it seemed like an accommodation between tribes. That was before she'd come here, seen the city, and watched their armies patrol the streets. Her people had once been like this. They knew that from the songs. They'd once possessed cities of their own and armies to envy. That had been long ago. They were a fragment of a lost people, traitors who had abandoned their gods to be free. This man could have crushed them and taken their shards, the few weapons they had passed down from ancient times. Why did he smile at her like that? What was he hiding inside by not singing to the rhythms to calm her? Sit, Eshnai, the king said. Oh, don't be frightened, little scout. I've been wanting to speak to you. Your mastery of our language is unique. She settled down on the seat before him. She could see what was on the table, some papers he'd been studying. He reached down and removed something from a small satchel at his feet. It glowed with red stormlight, a construction of gemstones and metal crafted in a beautiful design. Do you know what this is? He asked, gently pushing it toward her. No, Your Majesty. It's what we call a fabric, a device powered by stormlight that does something handy. This one makes warmth. Just a smidge, unfortunately. My wife is confident her scholars can create one that will heat an entire room. Wouldn't that be wonderful? No more fires and hearths. It seemed lifeless to Eshnai, but she didn't say so. She hummed the praise, so he felt happy telling her of this and handed it back. Look closely, King Gavilar said. Look deep into it. Can you see what's moving inside? That's a spren. That is how the device works. Captive, like in a gem shop, gem mark, she thought, attuning on. They built devices that mimic how we apply the forms. The humans did so much of their limitations. Because beings aren't your gods, are they? Yes. What? She asked, attuning skepticism. Why ask that? A strange turn in the conversation. Oh, it's just something I've been thinking about, he said, taking back the fabric. The others feel so superior as they think they have it figured out. He chuckled. They think you're savages, but I know the truth. You're not savages. You're an enclave of memories, a window into the past. He leaned forward, ruby light slipping between his fingers. I'm going to help you, Eshnai. Did you know I discovered how to bring back your gods? Now, she hummed to the rhythm of the terrors. No, my ancestors, he said, holding up the fabric. They're the ones who first learned how to do this. Hold a spren inside a gemstone. And with a very special gemstone, you can even hold a god. Your Majesty, she said, daring to take his hand in hers. He couldn't feel the rhythms. She didn't know. Please, we don't worship those Garth gods any longer. We left them, abandoned them. Ah, but this is for your good and for ours. He stood up. This life we live, a life without honor or victory, cannot persist. Your gods brought ours, and without them, we have no power. This world is trapped, Eshnai. Stuck in a state of dull, lifeless transition. He looked up toward the ceiling. Unite them. I need a presence. Only danger will unite them. What? She said to anxiety. What are you saying? Partially like you once. We stopped their ability to undergo the transformation somehow by capturing a spren, a very ancient, very important spren. He looked to her, his eyes alight. I've seen how that can be reversed. A new storm that will bring the heralds out of hiding. A new war. Insanity! She rose to her feet. Our gods try to destroy you. The old words must be spoken again. You can't. She trailed off, noticing the map on the table for the first time. An expansive map, showing a land bounded by ocean, an incredible drawing that put her own attempt at charting the areas around the Shattered Plains to shame. She stepped to the table and gaped, the rhythm of awe playing in her mind. This is gorgeous. Even the grand chandeliers and carved walls were nothing by comparison. This was knowledge and beauty fused into one. I thought you'd be pleased to hear that we are allies in seeking the return of your gods, Yavlar said. She could almost hear the rhythm of reprimand through his dead words. I know that you say you fear them, but why should you fear that which made you live? My people need to be united, and I need an empire that won't simply turn into infighting once I'm gone. And so you seek for war? I seek for an end to something that we apparently never finished. My people were radiant once, and your people, the Parshmen, were vibrant. Who is served by this drab world where my people fight each other in endless swallows without light to guide them? And your people are good scorches. She looked back at the map. Where is the Shattered Plains? This portion here? That is all of Natanatum you gestured toward, Eshinai. This little portion here is the Shattered Plains. He pointed to a spot not much larger than his thumbnail, when the entire map was as large as the table. He gave her a sudden, horrifying perspective. This was the world? She thought that in traveling to Quillinar, they crossed almost as far as the lane could go. The lane's legs weakened, and for some reason she had moved mourning. She dropped back into her seat, unable to stand. Gavilar removed something from his pocket. A spear? It was dark, yet somehow still glowed, as if it had an aura of blackness, a phantom light that was not light at all, faintly violet. A spear that seemed to suck the light in around it. He set it on the table before her. You can have that, he said. I have another. Take it and remember what your people once were. Wake up, Eshinai. Your people are now a little better than the Parshmen, and you could be so much more. He patted her on the shoulder, then left out the door. She stared at the terrible light and knew it for what it was from the songs. The forms of power had been associated with the dark light, a light from the King of Gods. The terrible creature the listeners had escaped. She seized the spear off the table and went running. When the drums were set up, Eshinai insisted on joining them. It was the only outlet for her anxiety. She beat to the sound of the rhythms in her head, banging as hard as she could, trying with each beat to slap away the things the king had said and the things she had just done. The five, leaders and listeners, sat at the high table, the remnants of the final course of their meal sitting uneaten. He intends to bring back her gods, she'd said. Close your eyes, focus on the rhythms. He can do it, he knows so much. Furious beats pulsing through his soul. We have to do something. Clay's slave was an assassin. She thought he purchased him on a whim, but Clay claimed that the voice speaking to the rhythms had led him to the man. He claimed it was a sign of what they were to do, and that the creature had confided its skills to him with rest. Long ago, they'd had the courage to do something drastic. They'd adopted Bullhorn to escape their gods. They sought freedom at any cost. Today, that cost would be high. She played the drums. She felt the rhythms. She wept softly and didn't look as the strange assassin, wearing white clothing provided by Clay, left the room. Just the peace of the music, like your mother always said, seek the rhythms, seek the songs. She resisted as the others pulled her away. She wept to leave those beats behind, wept for her people, who could never face this danger if they acted, wept for the world, who would be destroyed if they did not, wept for the king, whom she had consigned to death. The drums cut off around her, and dying music echoed.